Once again, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Thursday, March 23rd.
You had to check that, though, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you
2017.
Did.
Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
I was thinking, I wonder how many programs that I had said, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom. Quite a few.
Well, five a week for I don't know how many years.
Quite a few. Well, I've really only been doing them since 2004. Prior to that, my...
And it's 12 years.
Yeah.
50 weeks a year, five times 12, 600, I don't know, 1,000 times, something like that, 800,000 times.
Oh, I get to be... Well, we'll have to figure it out. It's more than 800, that's for sure. Probably closer than... It's in the thousands, Al.
Thousands.
Thousands. Anyway, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
That counts. Does that count as another one?
That counts as another one. We were
okay,
just right
see, on, sometimes you get two in one program.
We were just right on that cusp. So, anyway, thank you for joining us this afternoon. And you interrupted me. I didn't even get to say good afternoon, Al, did I?
I don't know. Are we counting those two?
We're counting those two.
Well, I'm maybe you did and maybe you didn't, but just for the heck of it, I'll say hello, Melody.
Well, it's almost like, you know, spring here. Well, it is spring. We turned spring this week, but the sun is out, beautiful day, but a little chilly still. So we can look forward to April as April brings the showers, of course, for May flowers. So we'll see if it works.
And it brings April Fool's Day too, doesn't it?
I didn't say that, Al.
I know, but you're talking about
April. You're just so worried about that, are you not?
No, I'm just aware, Melody.
Well,
it's not a question of being fearful. It's just a question of being wary. There's a difference.
You know what? It's going to be sad after April 1st passes. Now we have to wait a whole year for you to start worrying again. Anyway, we're not going to be worrying about gold in a year. I can assure you that. But we did have a little pressure. And I said yesterday, everybody's waiting on this healthcare decision this evening. And, you know, if they pass it, the markets will be up. If they don't pass it, markets will be down. And you know what? You know, big deal. The markets were down, you know, 200 and some points the other day. And it's like, well, you know what? It's up 3,000 points since the election. So, you know, let's put, you know, everything into a, you know, perspective here. And but gold is still doing quite nicely at $1,246.50, down to 70. We have silver up 4 cents today, $17.65. Platinum was down one at 965. Palladium, big day for palladium, was up 16 at 808. USDX today up 0.01 at 99.72. Crude oil was down 32.32 at 47.72. And the paper markets today, a little bit of pressure. And again, all the news is on the healthcare. The Dow was down almost 5 points at 20,656. The NASDAQ was down 4 at 58.17. The S&P was down 3 at 23.45. 10-year yield was up a little bit, 2.42%. Euro 108. Well, let's go down and see that fear and greed level continues to drop. It's at 30. Dropped 2 points. So again, the markets are not reflecting why, you know, the numbers of if there is this much fear. Usually fear doesn't happen until after the reason that creates
until
the
after
fear.
You get caught. That's what it usually works.
Yeah, that's when the fear comes.
That's when the fear comes in, when you get caught, say, oh my God.
Particularly after the, you know, particularly in the paper markets. But so, you know, a quiet day, so to speak. As I said, everyone is just sort of waiting for the decision tonight on the health care. And we're either focused on what happened to in London and, of course, the health showdown. And I just see here that the vote has been delayed. House delays Obamacare replacement vote as it struggles to muster the votes. So there will
to
be
do
no,
what?
So there will be no health care vote today.
And the vote is to do what? What is the vote to do?
To pass the repeal and replacement that
okay.
that Paul Ryan is basically right.
repeal and replacement.
Oh, they're going to repeal, you know, part of it. They're not going to repeal all of it. You know, some of it. I was reading it prior to the program. It's really kind of boring and kind of hurt my eyes. Well, because it's. But the House of Representatives delayed its vote on repealing and replacing parts of the Affordable Care Act after Republican leaders failed to rally enough support to pass the bill. The GOP House caucus will meet at 7 p.m. Eastern Time today to discuss its path forward. This was reported by NBC. The debate on the plan will start in the House on Thursday night. Republicans expect to have the votes to pass it on Friday. You know, we need some time to bribe these guys, you know? That's what.
Yeah, they need to make this happen after the, all right, and they're going to be, I'll bet you it's a late session on Friday, where it doesn't hit the news until everybody's on the way home from work. It'll happen over the weekend. You're not going to get, we'll watch and see, but they're ducking for cover, perhaps. And they may not be able to find enough people to vote for it anyway.
President Donald Trump met with the House Freedom Caucus for two straight days, aiming to convince the conservative group to vote to pass the plan Thursday amid concerns that it did not go far enough to repeal Obamacare. The White House gave the House Freedom Caucus a final offer Thursday in its effort to win enough votes for the legislation. As of Thursday afternoon, Freedom Caucus Chairman Representative Mark Meadows told reporters there are not enough votes to push the legislation through. We have not gotten enough of our members to get to say yes, but added that progress is being made. I don't know if there's anything else.
Somebody's idea of progress is not necessarily someone else's idea of progress, but the point is that it's not just the Democrats who are against the repeal of Obamacare. We can assume that the Democrats are almost unanimous. We know that the Republicans are not unanimous in wanting to get rid, in wanting to modify Obamacare. Some of them want it gone, and they're for the moment they are not willing to compromise. And unless they are willing to compromise and go along with the Republicans who want it only amended, it's not going to be amended. So what's going to happen then, though? Are they going to take another shot at it? Are they going to put it on the back burner and forget it for 6 months? What do you think?
I think what they should do is continue to work on it and say, hey, you know what? We've been doing this. But you know what? These Republicans have how many years? It's been in effect for how many years, and they still can't have a viable program that the other Republicans would accept. Yeah. I mean, come on, how lazy are they? I mean, come on, and then they put through Ryan's plan. I mean, and it's just, and that's the only one they have. No, I don't think they should pass it, because I'll tell you what, this isn't doing anything to help anyone. It's helping the politicians. It's helping the politicians just to say, oh, we finally got it done. Like, they've really worked. And like, oh, we're staying late so we can get this done. Hello, you had 8 years.
It's also evidence that there's not much difference between the majority of the Republicans and the majority of the Democrats. All of them want more government programs. Not everyone, but a majority of them want more government programs. And a handful of the Republicans are saying, no, we don't want any government program in this matter. Let the people handle it on their own.
The thing of
Get
it is,
government out of medicine. And I think that's what's going on. I'm inclined to agree with the minority in the Republican Party, but never who are wanting government to get out of medicine.
The thing of it is, government can't provide what the people want. The people want lower premiums, lower deductibles, no pre-existing conditions. The government can't provide all that. I mean, it's not going to happen. Somewhere, someone's going to have to give. And when you have these tax credits, you know, that, you know, instead of paying the penalty, they put in their tax credits, the premiums have actually gone up for older people. And everybody says, well, you know what? Older people should pay more because they go to the doctors more and blah, 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 blah. You know what? I mean, so this is something that can be argued. I was on the telephone with someone. We're talking, well, what would you do? Well, I'll tell you what they should do. They should take the healthcare system that the government has, that the politicians have, and they should extend that to every single American in this country, citizen. Let us have the good health care that they have.
Yeah.
Let the states govern and service the accounts. You know, instead of letting the federal government control, let the states control it. But give us their program. Let us have their insurance. I bet they have no high deductibles. I bet their premiums are relatively inexpensive. So I bet there's no limits.
They just
limits.
Get the taxpayers to pay for it ultimately. You know? So what we need to do, I think the solution...
They have to start somewhere, and what they've done so far is not enough.
I think the solution to the program is we've got to get somebody to pay for it besides the American people. So I'm thinking maybe the Canadians, maybe the Greeks, they're already so deep in debt that they... What difference would it make if we saddled them with Obamacare? Or maybe the Iranians? How about that? We could threaten them. We're not going to bomb you, but we'll make you pay for Obamacare. How about that? That'll throw the fear of Allah into them.
But and you're right, Al. The government shouldn't be in there. The system is corrupt. Something had to be done, but it didn't.
It's not just corrupt. It's stupid.
It didn't have to be done. It didn't have to be done by government.
Well, somebody thought he was going to have it was going to be Barack Obama's signature legislation, and they shouldn't call it signature legislation. They should call it graffiti legislation. Yeah, it's associated with Obama, but something somebody spray painted on an alley wall. Not a signature, but still a sign. But the point is both parties believe in more bigger government. And there is the problem. There's a handful of Republicans who are saying, no, we don't want more government. And the rest of them are saying, you must be crazy. We got to have more government. And there's the problem, or at least that's one of the problems. I won't say it's the problem, but it's part of the problem. Who is for less government right now? It's certainly not a majority of either party. Right? They talk about it. Republicans will talk about it. But when push comes to shove, if the public gets really angry about some program, they'll cut it back by 10 or 15% and say they're doing something remarkable when what they should do is just cancel it. Anyway, we'll watch and see. I'm sure that the people in Congress, they are trained to deal with these kinds of problems. And they'll come up with some cock and bull story between now and Friday evening.
And the problem is also when you have the Medicaid and, you know, all those. I mean, it's about to go belly up. I mean, how many more people can you put on that program? I mean, you know, it's so again, if people think that, you know, our finances are going to be controlled because we're going to have infrastructure spending and people are going to have great jobs and everything. If you really believe that government is going to shrink, not just in size, but in dollar amounts, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I know.
Things are not going to get smaller. And I don't want to say this, but again, it comes back to... I'm getting to sound like you, Al, repeating.
See what happens?
Jeez! No, as long as we have a fiat currency, government is not going to shrink. Our debts are not going to go away. There is no one that will be fiscally responsible as long as we have a fiat currency, period. I don't care who it is. It's just, and if they slow it down for 4 years, God bless them. What happens after that is going to continue. So your history... You know, our future.
That's what the debt comes out of. You spend now, pay later. Buy now, spend later. Okay, spend now and buy and pay later. That's what it comes down to. And we go deeper and deeper into debt until we can't pay. And it destroys our future. By going into debt, we are compromising and perhaps destroying and crippling our future. That's what this is ultimately all about. And the government looks at you with a straight face and said, what you need is more debt. That's all we need to do. We'll just pass more debt. We'll get some more idiots to buy government bonds and we'll spend more money and we can have something for you for nothing if you just vote for me.
problem
and most
is
of us are dumb enough to go along with that, but all it does is condemn our children, our grandchildren, to an impoverished life.
One day we catch up to the future.
And yeah, that's the future catches up with us.
No, we catch up to the future.
And you say tomato and I say tomato.
No, we catch up to the future. And that is the day of reckoning.
Yeah, no.
That is the day of reckoning.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not
when we have to face the reality of what we've been doing for the last 30-40 years.
And when they can't create any more programs. When they can't create any more programs to justify the creation of debt like they've had for so many years. That's the problem. What are they going to create? How can they extend the programs in order to create the debt to keep the system going?
Well, one of the ways is by giving more entitlement programs.
It has been Wall Street all these years. They create, and that's where we've seen the debt being created for.
Well, I think one of the things we talk about, the debt that's incurred by college students to get a college education, and the government has helped foster that, and now it's over $1 trillion. I think at times, I am convinced that the debt-based monetary system and our debt-based economy can't survive without more debt. More debt has to be coming all the time in order to fuel a debt-based monetary system and a debt-based economy. I think it goes to, why do we have subprime lending? Because we had to find some more debtors. People weren't going into debt as fast as the government needed. Why did we have loans for college educations? And I think the answer may be to create debt. They need the debt. They don't care about the college education. They care about creating more debt instruments, because ultimately that's what a debt-based monetary system, a debt-based economy are built on.
And they have the nerve. They're shameless. Why is it so important to bring immigration into this country?
More debtors. Yeah.
They're shameless.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can get away with it as long as the American people have no clue to what's going on. The American people think we are still living in an asset-based economy where debt is bad and assets are good. And the government just kind of smirks and laughs up their sleeve and they say, no, we're not.
So when you
we're
hear your
in a debt-based economy where debt is good and assets are bad.
So when you hear politicians say, oh, we need them. Well, now you know why.
Yeah. Somebody's got to allegedly pay the debt, but we'll see what happens. We'll see. The whole thing is mad. It's insane. It's been crazy since 71 when Nixon pulled the plug on the gold associated with the dollar, and the whole thing's been madness since then, and it's just now beginning to catch up with us. We're going to take a break, a couple commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. We're talking about debt and an idea that we've been advancing on this program and in the American Survival newsletter. We've been touching on it, exploring the idea. And the idea is that in a wealth-based economy, an asset-based economy, if you want the standard of living to increase, you have to get more assets. In other words, when the economy was based, the monetary system was based on gold or silver, if you wanted to actually increase the standard of living in this country, you would, at least one of the things you'd have to do is increase the supply of gold and or silver, right? In a debt-based economy, it follows that if you want the standard of living to seemingly improve, you have to go deeper into debt. You have to create, find, acquire more debt. Debt has become our form of wealth, and it's a kind of madness, but that's where we are. Now, here's an article. We talked about that in the previous part, that the government wants to... It's not an accident that government is creating more debt, as if, oh, what do we do? And the national debt just keeps growing and growing and growing, and people shake their heads and say, oh, my gosh, it's out of control. I don't think it is out of control. I think the government is doing exactly what it needs to do in a debt-based monetary system, in a debt-based economy. It is creating more debt, and in doing so, it figuratively creates at least the illusion of more wealth. The whole thing is insane, but I think I don't think the debt is accidental. Now, I might be right, and I might be wrong, but I am there's a certain amount of logic to it. Here's an article from Sovereign Man, Simon Black, and talking about the U.S. debt in part, and also the debt in Greece, just to illustrate what's happening here. It says, according to the government's own financial report for 2016, their annual net loss totaled $1 trillion, and the national debt increased by $1.4 trillion. That was in a relatively stable year. There was no major war or financial crisis to fight. It was just business as usual. And I agree with that. I think it was just business as usual. It's not an accident. They have to create more debt to fuel a debt-based economy. 2017 won't be any different. So cut off by the debt ceiling from their normal debt supply, the bond market. That's where the government is right now. They can't go any deeper into debt because of the bond ceiling. So they're cut off from borrowing on the bond market. The Treasury Department is resorting to what they call extraordinary measures. They're basically pillaging government employee retirement funds and will continue to do so until Congress raises the debt ceiling. Right? That's where they're coming up with the money to keep operating, or at least in part. They can't go deeper into debt, so they're going to have to take something from the government retirement funds. I'm sure that just thrills former government employees, but they must still be confident that, of course, the government will restore whatever wealth they've taken out of their accounts. And maybe they will. But one of the things it tells you is if government goes broke, one of the first things it's going to be looking for are retirement funds. That gives us a clue to what happens if the debt really does hit the fan. And as Simon Black points out, it's amazing that the richest country in the world has to plunder retirement funds in order to keep the lights on. Now, He's got riches. He says it's amazing that the richest country in the world has to plunder retirement funds in order to keep the lights on. He's got richest in quote marks, meaning maybe we're not the richest, and I don't think we are. I think we are the biggest debtor in the world. The government is the biggest debtor in the world. As such, I think it's arguably one of the poorest institutions in the world. There are people on the Kalahari Desert in South Africa that walk around and everything they've got is a spear and a bowl and a loincloth. That's all they have, and maybe a blanket to live out in the desert. Right? They are technically wealthier than the people are of the United States of America, because these savages on the Kalahari Desert don't owe any debt. They may only have a net worth of $5 apiece. You get their bowl, you get their blanket, you get their spear, all right, $5 apiece. Doesn't sound like much. But you and I, ladies and gentlemen, if you can believe what the government's done with the national debt, we're in debt to the tune of over $60,000 per person. That's my fair share, your fair share, Melody's fair share of the national debt. We're $60,000 in the hole, and these people walking around in the desert are actually $5 in the black. Arguably, I know it doesn't make sense, it's not obvious on an intuitive level, but we are more impoverished than the people living in the Kalahari Desert. And I know how nutty that sounds, and I don't exactly believe it, but I'm saying it because to illustrate a point. Who's the richest guy? The one who has the highest net worth. Kalahari Desert guys have $5. Their net worth is $5 apiece. Your net worth is 60 grand in the hole, and that of your daughter and your son and your grandchildren and whatever. We are on average over 60 grand in the hole. If the government numbers are right, they may be mistaken. It could be some people think we're actually closer to $600,000 in the hole if the debt is over 200 trillion, which some people believe it to be. Can't be paid. How rich can we be if we're that far in debt? Here's another comment. He says, former U.S. Treasury Secretary Larry Summers said it perfectly when he quipped, "How long can the world's biggest borrower," that would be the United States government, "remain the world's biggest power?" And that's a very good point. How can we maintain our military presence around the world? And I'm not even saying we should, but how can it happen if it's only supported with credit? We have to go deeper into debt. Every time we send a soldier over into Afghanistan, we have to go deeper into debt. Why can't we get back to an asset-based monetary system, an asset-based economy where our most important product is not entitlements, is not government debt, but we actually make things? TVs, computers, refrigerators, cars, make our own stuff. We did that at one point. We were the premier manufacturer in the world, and now we're not. We manufacture debt rather than assets. There is a fundamental problem here, and it's going to bite us all before this is done. He goes on, he talks about Greece. And he says, Greece is now in its ninth year of a major debt crisis. Greece has had 9 different governments since 2009. That's more than one a year. They get a new government like every 10 or 11 months on average, they get another new government. At least 13 austerity measures have been passed, multiple bailouts, severe capital controls, and a full-out debt restructuring in which creditors accepted a 50% loss. Yet despite all these measures, Greece is still in a debt crisis. I've talked about it before. I can't tell you it's God's truth, but I believe Greece is still in a debt crisis because they can't cancel the debt. Debt is our form of wealth. They can't cancel the debt. They don't want to pay the debt. They want the debt instruments in fractional reserve banking. If they can put the debt instrument in the bank vault, they can lend, in this country, they can lend 9 times as much money as the face value of the instrument they've put in the vault. If you cancel the debt, they can't lend that money. The banks can't lend that money to allegedly stimulate the economy. Right? We can't get rid of the debt. And I think that's what happened to Greece. They can't let Greece off the hook. And if Greece had any sense, I've said it for years, file bankruptcy and be done with it. Get on with your lives. But everybody wants to preserve the debt, preserve what's left of the debt at least. But he says right now, Greece is careening toward another major chapter in its never-ending debt drama. Just like the United States, the Greek government is also set to run out of money yet again in a few months and is in need of a fresh bailout from the IMF or the European Union. Without another bailout, Greece will go bust in July. If Greece defaults, everyone dumb enough to have loaned the money will take a big hit. This includes a multitude of banks in Germany, Austria, France, and the rest of Europe. Many of those banks already have extremely low levels of capital and simply cannot afford a major loss. Due to the interconnectedness of the financial system, the Greek default poses a major risk to anyone with exposure to those banks. Think about it like this. If Greece defaults and Bank A goes down, then Bank A will no longer be able to meet its obligations to Bank B. Bank B will also suffer a loss and perhaps collapse. A single event, a Greek default, can set off a chain reaction of what's called contagion in finance. And it's possible that Greece could be that single event. There's more to the article, but the point is we are not canceling debt. There was government passed laws back a good 10 years ago where they tightened up on bankruptcy laws in the country, where it was more difficult to file for bankruptcy. It's not impossible. It can be done, of course, but they tightened up on it. They want less people going bankrupt because when you go bankrupt, you cancel your debt. All right? Debt is our form of wealth. You go bankrupt, you cancel debt, you cancel wealth, or presumed wealth, apparent wealth. And they didn't want that to happen. We're seeing that happening to some, we're seeing evidence that something like that is going on in Greece. They can't afford to cancel all the debt. And yet Greece can't pay the debt. What are you going to do? And we're in a similar situation. We can't repudiate the debt. We need more debt to keep the debt-based monetary system going. We can't cancel the debt without wiping out paper wealth that's in every bank vault and retirement fund in the country. Cancel the debt, bonds, they become worthless. What happens to the retirement funds? What happens to the bank vaults? All right? Can't cancel debt, and the debt is too great to ever be repaid. What are we going to do with the debt? Can't be paid, can't be repudiated. What will we do? And the answer is we will continue to kick the can down the road until the can explodes in our face. We are headed for a problem that is enormous and, as near as I can see, inescapable. And when it hits, and when it finally hits, and it may be happening this fall, maybe it happens in 2 years, I don't know when it's going to happen, I say that all the time, but when it happens, there is going to be trouble unlike anything modern Americans have seen in this country ever before.
You know, Al, when we talk about government debt, we talk about $20 trillion to $100 trillion to $200 trillion. It is almost like people view that as a distant, it's government debt.
Yeah.
They really don't understand that that government debt is their debt.
It's well, in theory.
When that debt is in retirement accounts, when it's debt in all these various accounts that they will go after. Mm-hmm. No, that debt is owed and will be paid by the American people somehow, some way.
I don't think so.
It is their, well, when they lose.
They're going to try to get it paid, but I don't think we can pay it.
When they lose 70% of their money, that's their debt that they owe. That's what they're going to lose.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying, but my point is it's not so much that they're going to, when the debt disappears, the big point is that for one man's debt is another man's asset. If all we did was get rid of the debt, great, hooray, we're rid of the debt. But it's somebody else's asset. We cancel the debt, we have to cancel somebody's asset. They take that paper wealth, that debt-based monetary instrument, it becomes worthless. The economy is diminished. It's like somebody robbed the bank and stole a ton of gold.
They repossess. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's everything. But really, it's the American people that are on the hook for the continued debt creation of the government, that the government
and rightfully,
is doing.
And rightfully so. The American people should be on the hook.
They are
because we have been stupid. We have been ignorant. We have gone along with these idiot politicians or treasonous politicians. I don't know whether they're malicious or just stupid, and I think there's some of both.
It's a combination.
But we've gone along with it, and rather than be responsible people who pay our own way, We said, oh, we can live on debt. We can live on debt. The government will borrow money and give us money and, you know, currency, and we can somehow make that work out. No, you can't. All that came, all of the debt came out of the future. We've lost, according to government, $20 trillion of our future is gone. All right? And that's what the government's official national debt, $20 trillion. Again, John Williams, he says it's closer to $100 trillion. Congressional Budget Office and economist Lawrence Kotlikoff says it's actually over $200 trillion, including unfunded liabilities. If it's $200 trillion, you, ladies and gentlemen, each of you and each of your children and each of your parents are on the hook, in theory, for $600,000 each. And I know you don't have it. And even if you did have it, you're not willing, you're not going to cancel. Oh, Uncle Sam needs $600,000. Here, let me send you a check. You're not going to pay that debt. Most of you can't pay it. And even if you could, you're not going to be inclined to. And that's $600,000, assuming everybody paid the debt. If you knock out half the people in this country and say they're too poor, they don't have any money, they're not going to pay the national debt. It jumps up to $1,200,000 for those of people in the middle class and above. I mean, it is untenable, unpayable, and we are, what are we going to do? Someone, sooner or later, in government is going to have to say, folks, we really screwed up this time. All right? And we have been teaching you that these pieces of paper with nothing but somebody's signature on it, these mere promises to pay, are a form of wealth, and they're not. They're nothing but a promise to pay. They're nothing but a debt instrument. You don't want a promise to pay. You want a payment. You go to work, you have a job, you get paid. Not with a promise to pay, and that's all. If it's paper, it's a promise to pay. You're not paid until you get something like gold or silver in your pocket. Now you're paid. Right? And the problem is, the people who are actually writing the debt instruments, they're not paying in gold or silver. You've got to find someone else who's willing to sell gold and silver for Federal Reserve notes, debt monetary instruments, debt-based monetary instruments. And there's plenty of people who are willing to do it. All right? But it's a kind of madness, and there's no way this is going to come to a happy ending. We are not going to get out of this thing without some extraordinary pain, and the only question is, as we always say, when does it happen? When does the debt hit the fan? It's going to, and you look at it, and it's getting closer and closer and closer. It's like music in one of those monster movies, you know? And you can hear the music rising, all right, as you get closer and closer to the creature. I don't know where the creature is exactly, but you can bet that the creature is going to jump out of the darkness, and it's going to, you know, grab a couple of people before this is all over. And when it does, lots of trouble. And the only way you can get around this is you have to be smarter than your neighbors, who are too ignorant to protect themselves. And you've got to do what you can. Okay, we can't protect all ourselves together, then we have to protect ourselves individually. Melody and I are going to take a break for a couple of commercials. We'll be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival, Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What else, Melody?
Well, Bob in Iowa sent me an email. He says he heard on the radio broadcast last night that recently they inserted back into the health care bill was insurance coverage for illegal aliens.
Oh.
If veterans have any other source of insurance coverage, they will not qualify for this new coverage. Maybe we only hear selected parts of this bill.
Of course.
Well, you know, it's going to be the same thing as Pelosi said when they first did it anyway. You know, pass it and then we'll get the details later.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll read it, find out what's in it.
But there goes, that's a betrayal on the part of Congress by not reading the legislation before they vote
Absolutely.
For it or against it. You know, the truth of the matter is, if you were an honorable congressman, an honorable senator, every bill that comes up, if you haven't read it, you should vote against it. You should not give them the benefit of the doubt, say, well, it's probably a good bill. I haven't had time to read it myself, but I trust these guys. You know, no, you're not. You're crazy to trust the government. If you don't have time to read the bill, you shouldn't vote for it. You should vote against it. Not because you maybe are against it, not even because it's a bad bill, but because maybe the congressmen have more to read up there, and that's an absolute fact, than they can possibly read. They don't read the legislation. They just vote for or against. And the question, why do they vote for or against? Because somebody tells them. Somebody says, Congressman Smith, I want you to vote for this. We got five bills over here in the right-hand pile. Those are the ones you vote for. And over here, we've got three in the left-hand pile, and those are the ones you vote against. Somebody, if you don't read the bill, how do you know whether you should or shouldn't vote for it? We had Michael Moore was, you know, I tell a story on a regular basis, but Michael Moore, he did 9/11 Fahrenheit, and he interviewed one black congressman from New York, if I recall correctly, and I can't think of his name, but he says, why didn't you guys read the Patriot Act before you voted for it? And the congressman said, welcome to Washington, son. He said, we don't read any of the bills we vote for. They don't. I mean, if you could stack up the legislation that the congressmen vote for, just stack it up, pile it up, take here all the bills they voted for to enact and put it in a room, right? It's not like it would be a stack of paperwork that would be almost impossible for an ordinary man to read in a year's time. But they don't read it. They just vote for it because who's responsible for this? It can't be this way. They've got to vote for these things. You know, down here in Texas, we got the same thing. We wink at it. Our Constitution says they have to read the bill on three consecutive days at the state legislature before they can vote on it. And they say, oh, no, it's an emergency. So they'll only bring it up one time. Nobody knows what it says. And when you read this legislation, this is not like reading a Harlequin romance. This is complex information that deals with economics and war and, you know, benefits and whatever. This is complex. It takes real intelligence to read the stuff and understand what it says and say, yeah, okay, I think this is a good bill. I think this is a bunch of, I think it's a crock. I'm not going to vote for it. But you have to read it. And they're not. You know, why do you vote for people? Why do you vote for someone to go to Congress or to the Senate or the White House? You vote for him because you think he thinks pretty much like you do. And therefore, you assume that when they hand him a bill, and he will look at it, read it, and think about it, and he will reach pretty much the same conclusion you would reach. And he'll either say, nope, I'm not voting for that, or he'll say, yeah, this is good, I'll vote for it. He would do what you would do because his system of values, his persona, his personality is like yours. That's why we vote for people. But what difference does it make? We might just as well be voting for monkeys, right? Or monsters. If they don't read the bill, it doesn't matter if they are like you or if they're like Jeffrey Dahmer. Who cares what their personality is if they don't apply that personality and that apparent level of intelligence to reading the actual legislation? And they don't. And I've, you know, the fundamental I know from other studies are relative to the law. What's the essence of all law? And it is the congressional intent. Whenever Congress or whenever the Supreme Court gets into a bind and they can't, they have two litigants reach the Supreme Court and they say, this line, this phrase, this sentence means this. And the other guy says, no, it doesn't. It means this. In order for, if it's, and there are ambiguous statements in the law, right? And it could go either way. It's true. So what does the Supreme Court do? It goes back and investigates what the Congress wrote in the congressional record and in the debates and whatever that were concerning this legislation. That's what they've done historically to see, well, what did Congress say? And they could, from that, they could determine what the congressional intent really was. And they could overcome the ambiguity and said, this Congress misspoke when they wrote this, or they didn't speak clearly enough. And here, the legislative intent is the essence of every law. Where is the intent if they don't even read the laws they vote for or against? The only intent is to get some money and hang on to your job. It has nothing to do. There is no legislative intent in most of these laws. If they haven't read them, there can't be legislative intent. The whole thing is wrong. It's part of government trying to be all things to all people. And anybody who thinks you need a new law, go see your congressman, and he's got space to do 5 new laws today and 5 tomorrow and 5 the day after that. And if you've got enough money to bribe him, he'll perhaps represent your law. But they are brokering law. They're not legislating. They're not reading and writing and studying and debating and compromising. They're not doing that. I mean, they do to some degree, but it should be always. And it's only a little bit. And we're going to pay for that as they move more and more legislation in that serves self-interest, serves the interests of whatever people can bribe the Congress to pass to front for their laws. It's bad for the whole country. It's a terrible, terrible situation. It cannot be survived indefinitely. You know, nations are not like people. They don't expire and just, you know, you get sick and you die. Nations can get sick and hold together for decades. They live on a different time frame than individuals do. But they are not exempt from the fundamental forces of life. You do stupid things, and survival of the fittest is still in play. We can postpone it, we can dodge and duck around it and the rest of that sort of thing for a while, but sooner or later, survival of the fittest, and that includes the smartest, the most moral, the most intelligent, the most disciplined, right? They will prevail. And the idiots are going to be, they're going to be factored out. They'll be selected out. And if you don't want to be selected out, you need to study. You need to spend some time reading. Get some books. Get something. You can download things off the internet. It doesn't cost you anything other than your time and effort to begin to learn. And as you begin to learn, you can become more responsible. You become more responsible. Maybe you can get your neighbors to be more responsible. Pretty soon, we have a nation that is more functional. But this whole business of running up these enormous debts, as if Melody's talking about people paying the debt. I don't believe the debt will ever be paid. I don't think it can be. But if I were a young man right now, if I were 20, 30 years old, I'm one of the old people. All right, I'm one of the guys that, in theory, I should be cheering for Obamacare and the rest of this. In theory, it's a freebie for me. If I were one of the young people, I would tell all the old people, including me, to go to the hot spot. There is no reason why these young people shouldn't be able to build a home, have a family, have lives of their own, and in many regards, they can't, in part because they have to pay off the debt, unreasonable debt that was run up by their parents and their grandparents. Shouldn't be that way. We should be on a pay-as-you-go basis. You want something? Fine. Here's what it's going to cost, an increase in taxes. Government should not be able to provide benefits, entitlements to select groups, and without charging somebody right now, pay as you go, no debt, right? That debt is going to kill us, and it's going to, everybody who's got it, if you're depending on pieces of paper to protect your wealth, you are vulnerable to great loss, which is one of the reasons, and for me, it's probably the primary reason. Get some gold, get some silver. Get an asset that will survive when the paper assets, poof, burst into flame and disappear right before your eyes. And those of you that have gold, have silver, you've got a chance. Doesn't mean life will be easy, but you've got a chance to survive and perhaps even prosper dramatically if you have real wealth. When the world learns, as it will, as it must, that the pieces of paper are intrinsically worthless. So, blah, blah, blah.
When I said that they're going to pay for it, I don't mean that they're literally going to pay for it. They'll pay for it.
They'll pay for it,
but because I understand that the debt can't, you know. But I mean, they'll pay for it by the losing of their assets that they worked so hard for so many years and are expecting a decent retirement, and they will lose much of that.
They're going to pay in the sense that they will find themselves plunged into a Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And it won't be fun for anybody. It'll be painful for everyone. But do you know who's really going to pay the national debt? The people who bought the bonds in the first place and continued to hold them.
Yep.
And that's interesting to me because it's the rich people. People say, oh, the poor people are going to be made to pay the debt. No, they're not. They don't have any money. You can't get any money out of the poor people. They don't have any. And you can't get much out of the middle class. The people who are going to be made to pay the national debt are the rich people, by and large, who bought the bonds in the first place. They're the ones that paid for the debt. And the deal was, the government said, oh, we'll pay you back in 5, 10, 20 years, whatever. And they said, great, we're going to get paid back, and the government can put troops on the street and extort the money out of the public. And they won't do it. The ones who are really going to get ripped off on this, everybody's going to get hurt. Nobody's going to skate out of this thing free. But the ones who will pay are the ones who bought the bonds in the first place. That money's been spent. They paid for that money. They paid for the bonds. The money's been spent by government to do good deeds or whatever it is government thought it was going to do. That's been spent. And now when they find out, nope, sorry, rich folk, you're not going to get any of your money back. Ooh, that is going to be a surprise. A lot of people think this debt's going to be, it's going to hurt everyone. But the ones that are going to get hurt the most are of the class that bought U.S. treasuries. And they're the ones maybe who should have known better in the first place. I mean, I don't expect the average plumber to understand much about United States bonds. But I do think that the people in institutions who understand, who have enough wealth to buy treasuries, I would expect them to have spent a little time and say, well, what about this? Is this a good buy? Can this really work? And for the most part, they haven't done it. They just got into this thing, and they're the ones who are going to be paid, because those bonds are going to turn out to be worthless, and whoever's holding the bonds will lose their assets. So, blah, blah, blah. What do we do then, Melody? Get some gold, get some silver, hunker down, get ready. All right? The only thing, I just wish I could tell you when this was going to happen. But everything you see, it seems to be getting closer and closer and closer. And although we can't tell you when it's going to happen, it seems undeniable to me that it's going to happen. How can it not happen? The government keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. I don't care how... I, I don't care if the national debt, if they say it's $20 trillion right now, and if they can support $2 quadrillion in national debt. There's still going to be a day when we're going to face the fact that we can't pay the debt. And when we face that thing, institutions will begin to fall. And the economy will begin to collapse, and God knows where we go from there. But it's going to happen. You know, it's a little bit like riding on the Titanic. If you know it's going to sink, you got a couple of choices. You got to either get off as soon as possible or don't get out in the first place. But that's where we are. You look at this, the Titanic's going to sink. I'm telling you, it's going to sink. Don't get on that ship. If you're on it, get off. Get off, get into a lifeboat, get someplace that's going to sink. I don't know when, but it's going to sink. It's going to be a real tragedy. So I'm in charge on the Titanic. I'm in charge of recreation and entertainment for the passengers on the Titanic, Melody.
Oh, good grief. Mm-hmm. They'll be ready to jump off.
Well, maybe so. But maybe they'll survive.
Maybe they'll
they jump off soon enough. Maybe yep. That'll keep them alive.
Absolutely.
You know?
Get their life rafts of gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't jump off, you know, go from one boat to another boat that's also sinking. You know, that's what happens when you go into paper gold. You're just going from a sinking ship to another sinking ship.
Yep.
So, you know,
if it's paper, it's a debt. It's a debt-based instrument. The debt is too great to be repaid. If you're going to hold on to paper debt instruments, you're going to lose. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.